This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Welcome to Connect with Community Waikato on Free FM 89.0 and part of the Connect with Community podcast series. You're listening to Roseanne Murray, and I have with me in the studio today Kerry Church, who is the Director and Ethical Investments Advisor and Financial Planner for Moneyworks New Zealand Limited. Kia ora, Kerry.
Kia ora.
I'm really excited about having a chat to you around scams. I know that Age Concern are soon going to be running a lecture around scam awareness, and you're coming in to do that for them, which is fantastic. And that's going to be on the 7th of August from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m.
That's about right.
Yeah, at the link. So yeah. If you want to know any more, just go on to the Age Concern website and see more detail there. But what we thought we'd do is just have a chat around scams. But before I do that, I'm just going to ask you, Kerry, just to give a little introduction about yourself and maybe how you came about to be doing these sort of lectures around scams, and maybe a little bit about Moneyworks.
Sure. Moneyworks is a business that's been going for 28 years, and we have a couple of hundred clients all around New Zealand, and we help them work out sort of everything to do with their money and their investments. And in terms of scams, it first started about 5 years ago when one of our clients kept on asking us for money, and we couldn't work out why. And very quickly, we worked out that she was being scammed. And so we became very, very aware of it from then. We were able to stop it. She only lost $5,000. But it's something we've been very aware of. And we've had two clients scammed in what's called a long con. So a con is a confidence person. And the long cons are where people really get into your head and you fall in love with them, or they absolutely convince you about an investment. So we've had two clients in that situation. And the issue for us is that even though we'd work for them with them for 26 and 28 years, they wouldn't believe us when they were right in the middle of the scam. So we've been doing major work this year with every one of our clients to talk to them. And we figured that the more people that we talk to and explain about scams, the more awareness there will be, and that's what will protect them.
You know, just listening to you, I'm like going, I actually know someone in a similar situation. Mm-hmm. Or you hear about it now, don't you, on the TV, you know, whether it's in the news or even maybe a movie or a program or something. Yeah. It's becoming so much more common, isn't it? And the whole, I don't believe you, you know, they love me or they are real, whatever it might be, the reason why they want the money is genuine. So hard to get them to change their minds. And I think, you know, people I know in particular, you know, the family have just, you know, just so distraught.
And one of the really worrying things for us as financial advisors, and having worked with clients for 20, 30 years, is it's, we see it as our role to help protect our clients and to help make sure that their money is well invested. But we can do everything we want in terms of making really, really good investment decisions for our clients. Trump can do whatever he wants to break the world, but if a client falls for a scam, we can't protect them. And it's heartbreaking. It's absolutely heartbreaking because we can't protect them if they won't listen to us.
That's right. And you do see it too, don't you, with the banks where maybe, you know, through someone's credit card or something like that, they've lost a lot of money or maybe an investment. The banks are even having trouble, aren't they, trying to get the money back?
Yeah, with the banks, it is a little different because the banks don't have quite the same duty as financial advisors have. And there are different situations with the bank where there are different grades of when people can get their money back or not. And it really depends on how determined the person was and whether the person told untruths to the bank about what they were doing with their money, in which case the bank, you can't really have a comeback on the bank if you've not told them the entire truth, if they've asked you. And the banks are working very, very hard to put in place systems to identify transactions that are fraudulent. And that kind of goes back to the short con. So that's where you get a text message or you get an email or somebody steals your card. And the banks are very, very good at picking up when somebody has stolen your card. We've had that happen to us once when we were overseas. And the bank chased us. We were on a cycling holiday. They chased us all down the western coast of the United States till they managed to contact us. This is years ago. This is 15 years ago. Till they managed to contact us to tell us that we'd been scammed. They're very, very good at that. Mm. But the thing is, it is ubiquitous now. It is everywhere. And the techniques are so sophisticated. My client who got romance scammed was absolutely convinced that this guy, his name was Nate, loved her, and she was in love with him. She had had a had video discussions with him. And this is the scammers using artificial intelligence to put in this case, it was a stock photo of an actor, to put it onto the video to actually tell her that this was a real person. And the techniques are so sophisticated now. Even the text message techniques that you get, they're not necessarily sophisticated, but what they're doing is that they are catching you in a moment of vulnerability. So I got short conned on a text message to pay a toll. Now, these get sent out randomly as scams. The more people they send it to, they only need like, you know, 0.5% of people to actually fall for it to make it worth their while. I had recently driven on a toll road and I thought, oh gosh, you know, that's terrible. I don't want to owe somebody money. And I clicked on it. Fortunately for me, I realized virtually as soon as I had clicked on it and I managed to immediately cancel my cards. But then I had 2 or 3 weeks where I had to go through the whole process of getting new cards and resetting everything. But it's that they're just looking for that people with that moment of vulnerability or moment of just thinking, oh, yes, that's right. As you mentioned before, I am expecting a parcel. You know, should I click on this? And the really scary thing is you just have to be so vigilant on everything now. Everything.
You do. And I know we were speaking about off air about, you know, obviously, yeah, it was a fraudulent New Zealand Post text that I got. Yeah. And I think so many other people who might be listening have probably all experienced it themselves. You know, yes. Quite often there is a chance that you're going to be expecting a parcel along the way. Yes. And I think there were some others too about, you know, you hadn't renewed your license or renewed your warrant of fitness or something like that.
Your registration for your car. Mm. But there are also some very, very genuine IRD email scams. Now, it's really interesting. Up until about 18 months, 2 years ago, you could kind of tell when an email or a text was a scam because it would have typos in it and it was from the wrong kind of address. But particularly in the last year, the scammers have got so clever that it will look like it's come from IRD. It will look like it's come from land transport. So every time you get something where you have to click on it, just step back, stop, step back, even just move on to something else and leave it there and really, really, really think about it, about whether you think that is genuine. IRD, as far as I'm aware, will not send you something to click on. They will send you something that says log into my IR. So every time you see something you have to click on, just absolutely stop and really work out whether you think it is real or not. And ask someone else. Ask someone else for their opinion. One of our clients, actually one of my business colleagues' clients, is a senior medical officer, and he'd just been through something in his family. His daughter was having surgery, and he was just walking out of the hospital with a colleague, and he had his phone in his hand, and he got a message, And he was, because his head was a bit scrambled with the stress of it, he was going to click on it. And fortunately, he turned to his colleague and said, what do you think about this? And his colleague said, no, 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 don't do it. So, and he didn't do it. And you know, they worked out afterwards it was a scam. But there are very few things where you have to do it straight away. So just stop and step back and talk to somebody else or think about it. And if they really, really want you to do it, they're going to send you another message. I had one where we were being asked by our bank, ASB Bank, to do something. I can't even remember what it was. And it just seemed so bizarre that they were asking us. I left it. And then they contacted me again. And I left it. And they contacted me again. So in the end, I contacted ASB and asked, and they said, yes, it is real, but there was no way that I was going to trust what they had actually sent me, which actually brings me to another point. If you get a message that you're not sure about, don't contact the phone number in the message, because the phone number in the message could be fake. It could be the scammer behind the phone number in the message. Mm-hmm. If you get something from, say, ASB or from IRD and you really think that you should be actioning it, Google or find out their real phone number and ring them. Particularly one of the really bad scams from an investment perspective are people offering fake term deposits. And a lot of people have been caught with that. Mm. And what actually happens is they have contacted the person with the phone number on the email that they got, and it goes straight through to the scammer. So anything, don't trust a phone number in an email or a text that you think is suspicious. Go somewhere else, find the real phone number and ring in. And if it's real, they will find the real person for you. The key thing is step back and pause.
That is such a great tip, and in particular around the clicking on any link. I think that's great advice for anyone. And I know myself, I have Southern Cross Medical Insurance, and I had a claim, and so I got an email this morning which said, you've got new correspondence, please log into your
into
individual
portal.
Portal to be able to see the information. So that's a timely reminder for me too. So good message for our listeners out there is, you know, if you've got this email you're not sure about and it's asking you to click onto a link, be very, very mindful. Now, what about though if, you know, quite often we get surveys sent to us from, you know, where maybe I'd been to a restaurant and they're wanting some feedback, or, you know, maybe another organisation doing some sort of survey. And because quite often surveys of what a lot of organisations have used to be able to get that feedback, especially from clients or customers or just the general public. Mm-hmm. What's your thinking in that space?
The first thing is, if you do a survey and you post a ranking, so a lot of people actually send surveys and ask you to put a comment on Trustpilot or on Booking.com or a Google review, that's permanent. So you need to be really, really confident that you want to do that. Mm-hmm. The second thing is, if you are doing it, try, not always possible, try to not put your full name on it. Try to just put, say, your first name or an alias on it. Not always possible for if you're doing a Google review, for example. There are places where they are genuine. So the three that I have mentioned, Booking.com, Expedia, Trustpilot and Google, are relatively safe. But you hesitate unless you're really, really sure that you want to have that information and your name attached to it out there forever.
That's a very good point, actually. I generally do the reviews because I'm like,
you're
well,
a nice
you know, because I quite often... apart from that, I quite often look at reviews,
right,
you know, to sort of see, you know, what people are saying, if it's about buying a product or whether it is maybe going to a restaurant or using some other service. So I then think, oh, well, if I'm using that service, I'll also provide the review myself. But I'm probably just needing to be a little bit more cautious about that. And also
just with your name. Yeah. Just with your name. So yeah. See if you can have a little bit of an alias.
Yeah. Actually, interesting. Another one that came up for me was a radio radio station competition, not through Community Free FM. You had to obviously go online, you had to log in, put your details in and give the answer, whatever you thought the answer was, to go in for the prize, which was like a overseas trip to some massive concert. I think it was in Las Vegas. But interestingly, you had to put in your date of birth. Yeah.
That could be maybe you have to be over 18 or something, because you have to be over 18 to enter into a contract in New Zealand.
Yes.
So that could be why. But, yeah, that would make me pause.
It did. And yeah. I actually didn't go down that track.
Right.
I sort of thought, you know, I don't mind putting my name, address, my phone number, my email, you know, it's sort of out there in public domain, but not my date of birth.
But even then, Roseanne, when you put all that information in, you need to be careful, because it's very easy to mimic somebody if you know their email address and their name.
I wouldn't put my home address or anything like that in with it. Yeah. But you know, even as you say, you know, they could easily hack into my email address and then start firing off emails.
Yes, and talking about hacking into email addresses, an experience that I had, I was in the middle of organising a trip, and my trusted travel agent, who I've worked with for 10 years, sent me an email asking me to pay an invoice. And I knew that I had to pay an invoice. And I emailed her back. I opened a new email and emailed her back, and I said, the format of your email seems a bit weird. You know, are you sure that you want me to click on this link and pay this? Because that is how we pay the invoices, is we click on the link to see the invoice. And I got an email straight back saying, yes, I want you to go ahead and do that. And I was in the middle of doing something else, and I had a few doubts, but I clicked on the link, and I am very, very fortunate that I did it on my iPad and not on my computer, because my iPad has lots and lots of protections, and I went to this scammer's website. When I finally heard from my travel agent later that day, somebody had got into her email and hacked her whole email and taken over her email and was talking as her, and she had to have her whole computer rebuilt.
Wow.
So I'm just so skeptical of everything now.
Oh, don't blame you. And it's sad, isn't it, you know, that we do have to be so much more vigilant, and we are becoming so much more sceptical, aren't we?
Yes.
But we just have to.
The other part of that is so much is online now. So you can't really escape it, because that is how life works these days, through email, through messaging, through online. So one of the in terms of speaking about online, when you are communicating with people, there are apps that are encrypted, so they are safer. So there's things like WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger and Google Chat. But those are also ways that the long con people, the people who want to get into your head and convince you, that's how they message you. Because when they're encrypted, there's no record. You can't actually trace them. So if you're having a conversation with somebody and they say, so my client who was romance scammed, she was not looking for a partner. She was actually just doing a quiz online. And the question said, where do Anzacs come from? And the answer they gave was wrong. And she went on and she said, no, your answer's wrong. This is where Anzacs come from. And somebody engaged with her and said, I'm very interested in your perspective. And they got talking on that platform. I don't even know where she was doing the quiz. And then they said, let's take this offline and have a personal discussion. So as soon as somebody's doing that with one of those encrypted apps, your antennas should absolutely go up. But encrypted apps are very good for talking to your friends, but be aware they can be hacked as well. So be sure that you're talking to your friend and not somebody who's taken over their Facebook profile.
Yeah, another great tip there. Thank you. So what else are we seeing out there or hearing out there, and especially maybe for our older generations? You know, are they still doing many phone scams? Is that still big?
I think there are definitely phone scams, but they tend to be on landlines.
Right.
And very few people have landlines these days. So I think that the scammers have worked out that there are easier ways to scam than on the landlines. I have clients who take different approaches to people who ring and try and scam them on the phone. One client or one person I know said that they just kept on pushing all the buttons on their phone until the other person hung up. I have another one or two clients that seem to have a lot of time on their hands, and they engage them in lots of discussion, and they start sort of just wasting their time. But again, if somebody rings you out of the blue, particularly saying they're from Spark or Vodafone or somebody like that, just say, look, I'm sorry, I can't help you. And then if you really think that there is something, then again, hang up, ask for their name, ask for their name and what they're doing, and then go and find the real phone number for Spark and ask if somebody should be ringing you.
I know a few years ago, unfortunately, there was a lot of phone scams around pretending they were from Spark.
Yeah.
My mum was one of those people, and they were constantly ringing her and ringing her.
Yeah.
And she sort of got to the stage where she was going to nearly give in. And luckily she had spoken to me about it. And I was like, no, mum, no, just got to keep hanging up. But she said, I'm just so sick and tired, you know, of all these phone calls. And she didn't want to not answer the phone.
And if they do keep on ringing and you do feel like you want to give in because you want to be polite, the minute they ask for access for your computer, you have to be rude.
Yeah.
You have to not do what you've been taught to do. You have to be rude and you have to hang up.
Yeah.
You should never give anybody access to your computer over the phone.
No. And also too, definitely not bank account details. I know that's what they
details.
were wanting this outfit that were trying to scam my mum was, you know, oh, we need your bank account details because you're owed a credit. That's what it was.
Right.
And it was a really interesting one because they wanted to put some money into her account, but I straight away my red flags were going up going, this is money laundering. Scenario.
That's a different subject, but it's really interesting because we don't have checks anymore. You can see how they would be able to convince people.
Yeah.
You know, I need your bank account number to be able to put the money in because I can't send you a check anymore. Again, hang up and find the real phone number for the organisation. Get the person's name. And make sure that you're clear because they might go, my name's Claire. And, you know, so they've told you your name, but you haven't actually heard it. So be very clear about what their name is.
Yeah.
Money laundering scams are another huge issue, and we could talk about that for another 2 or 3 hours.
We could. And actually, do you know what? We've only got just over 4 minutes to go.
Wow.
I told you how quick time flies. Yeah. So maybe just in that time, maybe are there any other key tips or messages that you think would be really great for all our listeners to hear?
If you do have some investments and you have a financial advisor, I strongly recommend that you contact them and give them permission to contact somebody else in your family if they think you are being scammed and you won't believe them. It's a real issue for us as advisors because we have our relationship with our client and we can't just suddenly go, Jane, I think you're being scammed. I'll contact your daughter, Mary. We're not allowed to do that.
Mm.
So the banks aren't allowed to contact anybody other than you. So if it's something that you're concerned about, put in a fail-safe protection.
Right.
And I don't know how open they will be, but you know, that is something that you can do to protect yourself. That's something we've done with all of our clients this year because we need their permission to be able to contact those people.
Right. Okay. That's a good piece of advice there again. Thank you for that, Kerry. Are there any other sort of scams you're hearing about that maybe we can just go, okay, need to be a bit more aware of that?
Well, of course, there's the online shopping scams.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of people now do buy things online, particularly since COVID, and get them delivered to their house. As an example, I was looking at buying a dress, beautiful dress. And I went on and I looked at the site and I thought, oh, is that a scam? Is that real? Because on Facebook in particular, there are so many advertisements that are scams.
Mm.
And what I did was I went off Facebook and I Googled it and I said, I can't even remember the name of it now, is XYZ a scam? And all the reviews that came up said, no, not a scam, genuine. And I thought, oh, still not sure. So I kept on watching this dress on this ad. And about 3 months later, I thought, I've had enough. I've got to have that dress. And I went on and I Googled again, is XYZ a scam? And it still came up saying that it was all okay and it was all safe. The reason I left it for so long is they come up with new brands. And it can take a while for people to actually discover that it is a scam and actually put posts up saying that it was a scam. Nice story, though. I got the dress and it's lovely.
Oh, that is so good to hear. Talking sort of similar to that is I was looking at purchasing something online and I prefer to look for, say, New Zealand companies.
Yep.
And with a New Zealand, email domain.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand that also too, it could say .co.nz,
yes.
But actually it's not a New Zealand-based organisation.
There was one I was looking at, a nice dress again, that this was about 6 months ago, through somewhere called Tauranga Boutique. And when you went to the website, which was .co.nz, actually it might have been .com, but it was all talking about how it was based in Tauranga and photos of the beaches and things like that. And it was a scam.
Yeah.
But you didn't find out until later on because, prefer to buy New Zealand made too.
Yeah, so you'll be so careful, don't you? And I actually then went online and Googled it and, yes, and I saw a Christchurch address and I found a phone number. So I then rang and...
Oh, good idea.
Yeah, and it's and to me it was as genuine as it possibly could be. Yeah. Hey, look, we're nearly out of time, as I was saying before. You know, time does fly, and especially on a subject like this, we've got to be so vigilant, don't we,
really do.
Around scams. And they are getting more clever and cleverer as they go. So
I've just got one last thing.
One quick thing, yes.
People in New Zealand don't like talking to other people about their money. You have to start learning how to do that. You have to start checking with your family and friends.
Okay, that's a fantastic final tip for us to pass on to everyone. So thank you very much, Kerry Church,
thank
for coming in today. Much appreciated. Ka kite, everyone.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.